Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition, Saturday and Sunday, May 16th and 17th, 2026. We'll start on the front page today, go through our local news, take a break around the middle for obituaries, wrap up with some features and sports, and maybe I'll even tell you what the week's going to hold as far as the weather goes. We'll see what time holds for us today. We'll start on the front page with our headline, Big Changes. D118 centralizes pre-K kindergarten at Mark Denman. This comes to us from reporter Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. 13 kindergarten classrooms will be moving into the Mark Denman Elementary building as it undergoes an entire restructuring. Mark Denman Elementary will become a comprehensive birth to kindergarten center starting this upcoming school year, which will move some of its current students in grades 1 through 4. Superintendent John Hart spoke to the board and public during Wednesday's District 118 school board meeting about the restructuring of Mark Denman Elementary, stating he wanted to clear up some rumors about the adjustment. "We are still in conversations with Carl Clinic," Hart said. "We've talked about both leasing and purchasing. There's been no decision made. The decision made is that pre-K and kindergarten and our birth to three program will be at Mark Denman School next year. The Mark Denman Elementary will be the centralized hub for early learning, focusing on three programs. There'll be birth to three services and all pre-kindergarten and early childhood special education classrooms, all kindergarten classrooms, not including Northeast Elementary magnet students, and some special education classrooms will be under one roof. This move will bring around 300 students currently enrolled at Mark Denman Elementary School to be moved to other District 118 elementary schools. All of those buildings have had more students than you're currently looking at," he said. "This will leave room for Mark Denman to grow if additional funding would become available for pre-K. Doing so will also allow Mark Denman to host multiple early education special education classrooms," according to Hart. "At Mark Denman, we'll have one kindergarten cross-categorical special education classroom. We'll have three life skills classes that are kindergarten first grade," Hart said. Hart added that there is no finalized plan for the MATS gifted program, which is currently based at Mark Denman. For Hart, this has been a longstanding goal to centralize kindergarten students. "With kindergarten centralized, there'll be zero mobility at kindergarten. It will be nice that our kindergarten students will have a home at Mark Denman. No matter the circumstances of their family, they will remain in that school for the year." Hart added that this move makes everything more feasible for parents and guardians. "Huge benefit to our kindergarten and pre-K students. It will be size appropriate and age appropriate," Hart said of the new playground. He added that the building has bathrooms in the classroom and a room with washers and dryers that they will be able to utilize. "The staff can use, the community can use, our library will remain." While Hart stresses finances were not the main driver behind this decision, there are cost savings with this move. And with the move comes redrawing the school's district maps for those who will no longer be going to Mark Denman Elementary. "I really looked at trying to put the areas together so the kids that live in the same neighborhoods would go to the same schools, even though, yes, I understand that's not their neighborhood school," Hart said while showing the map of the redrawn districts during the meeting. "It's very important to me to do that." Christopher Easton, a D118 board member, commented on Hart's work, saying, "I think Mr. Hart, you and Mrs. Marquesha Parker did an excellent job on this, and I think it's a good decision." Mary Ellen Bunton, director of curriculum, and Tyler Weidenberner, director of buildings and grounds, will provide guidance in the coming weeks, according to district officials. The district said on Thursday the schools received lists of students being impacted by reassignments, and families will be notified by mail. For more information, district officials asked parents and guardians to contact the D118 administration office at 217-444-1000. In other local news, Tanner enters Astronaut Hall of Fame. This too came to us from Christy Jankowski, Dateline Danville. "Well, before he became Astronaut Joe Tanner, he was just a kid in Danville with dreams. Tanner, who helped get the International Space Station set up and running and flew two times on the space shuttle Atlantis, will be inducted into the United States Astronaut Hall of Fame on Saturday. There are two elements to it," Tanner said, of the induction at the Kennedy Space Center at Cape Canaveral, Florida. "The first is the actual induction itself. underneath the Space Shuttle Atlantis, which is kind of cool. It's a really special place because I flew on Atlantis twice, so it's like home. Tanner's become a local celebrity in Danville, joining the likes of Dick Van Dyke and Gene Hackman, even with a drink named after him at the Breezy Bar and Grill. Tanner said he is less focused on the spotlight, but more on his roots. "Just want everybody to know that I'm proud to be from Danville," Tanner said. "It's my hometown, and I'm proud to call it that." Tanner says the main focus of the event is the fundraising component for the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation, and he says two of the chosen winners are from the University of Illinois. "Most of my motivation is to not mess up, represent the agency and the Hall of Fame members respectfully, and make two good speeches," he said. "It's my opportunity to tell stories and give thanks, mostly to the people that made this whole thing possible for me, starting with my wife, by the way. I'm passionate about the Scholarship Foundation, so it's my opportunity to plug that. Also get people excited about ASF and the scholars that we are able to help every year." These scholarships are of $15,000, and he gets to award them as a presenter and a member of the Scholar Selection Committee. The night will end with a black tie gala, and while the attention is not something Tanner loves, he's honored and excited to be inducted. "It wouldn't be right to say I'm not excited about it, because I am," he said. "But the notification of my selection happened in December, so I've been cooking this thing for 5 months plus. Anticipation for the event analysis is happening, and I'm ready for it, but I'll be glad when it's over, if that doesn't sound too bad." Tanner grew up in the 1960s, which heavily influenced his decision-making. "I grew up while we were in the space race, if you will, trying to get to the moon before the Soviets did," he said. "Everybody growing up during that period of time was pretty fascinated, so I got enticed by that whole possibility." Tanner says after graduating from the University of Illinois, he joined the Navy and then eventually became a NASA pilot and flight instructor. Tanner's career is quite impressive, but he says he has to be persistent, had to be persistent to get there. "I first applied for the class of 1980, he said, came to work for NASA as a pilot in 1984, continued to apply for the program, got interviewed in 1987, but was not selected and kept on trying. So my message to the students that I talk to is, if at first you don't succeed, try again, persevere, try to make yourself better qualified for the next opportunity, and don't give up." As far as which mission was his favorite or most meaningful, Tanner points to his third mission to deliver and assemble the first large solar arrays to the growing International Space Station aboard Endeavour from November 30th to December 11th in 2000. There, Tanner helped deliver supplies and equipment to the first resident crew of the International Space Station. "We were the first people bringing solar power to the station," he said. "It was really important, and to bring up that power as a crew of five, meet up with a crew that was in space, we got to knock on the hatch, and the people on the other side answered, which was kind of cool. It was a great mission." And just looking up at the night sky, Tanner said he can see his work. "At the time, you don't think about the significance so much," he said. "You just have a job to do, but you don't have a big picture context. Now you can look back at it and say, oh, you know that station goes over, and I look up and I say, oh yeah, I helped build that." From the Walk of Fame plaques in Danville to the hall filled with astronauts in Florida, Tanner said he doesn't seek the attention, but he hopes young people in his hometown see what's possible. It's kind of weird. You drive down into town and there's a sign that says, "Danville, hometown of astronaut Joe Tanner," he said. "I don't mind it, but I don't need it. I don't particularly like attention. Of course, I'm getting plenty of it here this weekend." Tanner graduated from Danville High School in 1968, then obtained his Bachelor's of Science in Mechanical Engineering from the University of Illinois in 1973, which he says put him on the path to space flight. Tanner has received multiple special honors from the Navy, NASA, the University of Illinois, and is an Eagle Scout. Congratulations, Mr. Tanner. You are something to be made proud. Our final story on the front page is a state story. A state Senate recount could extend into July, and it comes to us from Tom Davies of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. But before I read the article, I thought I would read to you another information box that was placed alongside the article. And the title of the information box is called Recount Rules. And so I thought maybe this would be helpful as we read this article together. Any candidate or county party chair seeking a recount in either of the two close state Senate races will have to pay an upfront fee. State law sets a minimum $100 fee for the first 10 precincts in which a recount is sought, and $10 each for any additional precincts included in the request, and that fee will be returned if whoever sought the recount prevails in the final tally. So let's go back now to our story. State Senate recount could extend into July. It could take several weeks to complete a recount, if one is sought, of the razor-thin margin in the Republican primary race between state Senator Spencer Deary and his President Donald Trump-endorsed challenger Paula Copenhaver. The Indiana Recount Commission on Friday approved procedures for checking ballots in a possible recount just hours before the Tippecanoe County Election Board completed the final preliminary tallies in the Senate race, District 23. As Tippecanoe County counted no additional ballots in the race, the totals from all six counties in the district showed Deary with a three-vote margin, 6,337 to 6,334, over Copenhaver, the Fountain County Republican chair. Recount filing period opened. Friday was the first day recount petitions could be filed with the state. A candidate has until noon Eastern on Tuesday to do so, while any Republican county chair in the district faces a noon Friday, May 22nd deadline to ask for a recount. Copenhaver did not immediately seek a recount Friday, and neither she nor a campaign spokesman responded to messages with the Indiana Capital Chronicle seeking comment. Deary, a first-time senator from West Lafayette, was among the Republican legislators targeted by Trump after voting against the congressional redistricting plan pushed last year by the president. When asked about the prospect of a recount, Deary replied, "I don't have anything to say about a request that hasn't happened yet." Final tallies were also posted Friday in the Senate District 15 primary between Republican Senator Liz Brown of Fort Wayne and challenger Darren Vogt. Those results for the district, which is entirely in Allen County, showed Vogt picked up one vote from the preliminary figures, but Vogt still trailed Brown by 14 votes, 5,241 to 5,227. Vogt did not respond to messages seeking comment about whether he would seek a recount. Recount could last until July. The State Recount Commission, meanwhile, approved Friday the selection of a recount director and guidelines for State Board of Accounts auditors in conducting any election reviews. Recounts conducted in 2024 of two contested Indiana House primary races confirmed the initial results, finding only two miscounted ballots out of thousands. But those reviews were not finalized until August, 3 months after the primary was held. State Examiner Paul Joyce, who heads up the Board of Accounts, said after Friday's commission meeting that the logistics are complicated for a recount spread over multiple counties. The tight Deary-Copenhaver race involves all or parts of six counties spanning much of the area between Lafayette and Terre Haute. Joyce said field auditors could need 2 days in each county to complete their work. "If it's in the six-county area, you're talking to a minimum of 12 on-site days," Joyce told the Capital Chronicle. "It's not going to surprise me if it's into July. I would hope it's done before the end of July and we don't get into August." Well, let's turn our attention back to what's going on locally. Here's some things for your calendar. Let's see. Downtown Danville hosts Summer Luau. This is a staff report. First Fridays announces the Artisan Summer Luau on Friday, June 5th at Temple Plaza. Okay, mark your calendar. Friday, June 5th, Luau. According to a news release this year, we're combining the summer fun and relaxation of the classic summer luau with the mouth-watering artisan table. Indulge in a carefully curated tropical menu and enjoy refreshing mocktails crafted to pair perfectly with the menu. This is a complete evening of dinner and entertainment, all in downtown Danville. At Temple Plaza, you can enjoy the tropical sounds of live steel drum music by Circle City Steel, quench your thirst with one of the refreshing drinks from Exotic Pina de Go, while you browse vendor booths and local shops as you soak up the evening sun. Make it a complete night out by visiting the Fisher Theater for a showing of Jaws on the big screen for only $5. No tickets necessary for the live music. You can purchase tickets for the dinner online at signupgenius.com. The $25 dinner ticket includes sides of a fluffy coconut jasmine rice, tropical fruit salad with fresh watermelon, cantaloupe, honeydew, strawberries, grapes, and kiwi served in a carved fruit bowl, fresh made salsa with pineapple, mango, red bell pepper, red onion, cilantro, and jalapeno served in a half pineapple shell. The entree is Kalua pork sliders, smoky slow roasted pork stacked on soft Hawaiian sweet rolls and grilled pineapple chicken skewers. And the drinks, you can enjoy specially crafted mocktails created by Vermilion River Beer Company's very own Kenny Heckler. Each tropical drink recipe was designed with the menu in mind to pair perfectly with your meal. Don't miss this fun and festive kickoff to summer at for the first Friday's Summer Luau from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, June 5th at Temple Plaza in downtown Danville. Well, it sounds delicious. We'll pray for great weather. There's also special events coming up at the Vermilion County War Museum, located at 307 North Vermilion Street in Danville. For the War Museum's first Saturday event on June 6th, it will be another free admission day and an opportunity to see the actual Medal of Honor awarded to Danville's General John Charles Black. General Black's granddaughter, Abby Marsh, will also be in attendance. Other items tied to the 37th Illinois Infantry will also be on display. Historians Tim Smith and Michael Eberhardt will answer questions about General Black and his brother William. Both Black brothers were recipients of the Medal of Honor. The program will begin at 1 p.m. and the reception will follow the brief presentation. The Roar Museum is open on Tuesday through Saturday from noon until 4 p.m. June the 6th is going to be a busy day if you want to head on over to Covington Square. The Colton Wright Memorial Car Show will be held from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that's Eastern Time, on Saturday, June 6th, around the Covington Square in Covington. Music, Angie's Country Kitchen food truck, kids' activities, and shopping on and around the Courthouse Square will be part of the day. A Covington High School Class of 2016 tent will also be set up for classmates to meet. Colton was a 2016 Covington High School graduate. Ice cream will be served from the Sunday shop from noon until 2 at the tent, and all CHS 2016 alumni are invited to attend. The cost to enter a truck, car, motorcycle, ATV, or golf cart will be $10. Dash plaques will be awarded to the first 50 participants, and awards will be announced at 1:30 p.m. All proceeds go to the Colton John Wright Memorial Scholarship at Danville Area Community College. If you have any questions or need more information, give a call to Amy Thompson at 765-585-5945. Also, for those of you in the Hoopston area, Hoopston Library is holding a plant swap. The Hoopston Public Library, located at 110 North 4th Street in Hoopston, is holding a spring plant swap. It's located in the upstairs main reading room. Our seed library there offers free flower, veggie, and herb seeds to get your garden started. And if you have extra or leftover seeds, you can leave them there to share with others in the community. Additionally, if you have any leftover seedlings or perennials that need thinned and you'd like to share them, there'll be a cart near the seed library for those donations. Outdoor or garden plants only, no house plants. Plants should be in individual water-resistant containers. For more information, you can contact the Hoopston Public Library at 217-283-6711. Well, it must be time for high school class reunions. The Georgetown Ridge Farm Alumni Association and the class of 1976 would like to invite you to attend the alumni banquet set for Saturday, May 23rd. The banquet will be held at the Beef House Banquet Center in Covington. Social hour starts at 5 Central with dinner at 6 and the program to follow. We are honoring the class of 1976, who's hosting, the graduating class of 2026, and the class of 2001. Tickets are $35 for general admission and $40 at the door. The classes of 1976 and 2026 ticket price is $15 in advance or $20 at the door and can't be purchased from Lori Starwalt, the alumni chairwoman, and picked up at the will call the day of the banquet. Call 217-799-6279. You can Venmo at Lori-Starwalt, that's S-T-A-R-W-A-L-T-1, or send a check to 406 East West Street in Georgetown. Please make out the check to the GRHS Alumni Association. Looks like Westville Library is holding a book sale. Westville Library, located at 233 South State Street in Westville, is holding a book sale from 10 to 5:30 on Friday, May 29th, and from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday. All items will be 25 cents, or you can fill a bag for a dollar. And if you had like more information, contact the Westville Library at 217-267-3170. There are some as a food mobile stops in Vermilion County also scheduled. The Eastern Illinois Food Bank announces the Food Mobile will be distributing food to local families facing food insecurity in Vermilion County this month. On Tuesday, May 26th, the Food Mobile will make stops in Rossville and Ridge Farm. The distribution is part of the Food Bank's Food Mobile program, a system of mobile food pantries designed to help bring nutritious food to rural or underserved areas. The first stop on May 26 will be at Chrisman Park in Rossville from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., followed by a stop in Ward Park and Ridge Farm from 11:30 to 1:30. For a full schedule of the Food Mobile, visit EIFEI for Eastern Illinois foodbank.org. Well, I missed that middle part of our time together today, so let's take a moment and pause for the death notices that were received by Friday. We have just one today. Lois Whiteman. Lois Whiteman, age 98, of Georgetown, passed away peacefully at her home on May the 3rd. And there is a comment that Rort Vet Funeral Services and Crematory is honored to assist the family with arrangements, but there are no arrangements that have been shared at this time. If you'd like to leave the family online condolences, please visit www.rovetfuneralservices.com. There really is quite a lot of local news today, and while I would normally spend some time in the features pages, let's just keep going with things that may be important to you happening in the community. The City of Danville announces plans for Parkhaven Boulevard. The City of Danville announces road work on Parkhaven Boulevard to start on Monday, May 18th. According to a news release from Marla Sutton, engineer technician, the work will be completed in three phases. Phase one of the road work on Parkhaven is scheduled to start Monday the 18th with saw cutting, median removal, and asphalt patching. This phase is expected to take approximately a week to complete depending on weather conditions. We ask that you use caution driving through the area as lane widths will be reduced during construction. Phase two will consist of an oil and chip surface coat. This application helps seal the pavement and provides a base for the final layer of microsurfacing. During this phase, there may be some inconvenience as the materials are placed. We ask that you drive with caution around the construction. With this process, traffic helps roll the rock into the oil, so motorists should expect loose gravel. Once placed, the oil and chip needs to be cured for approximately 2 weeks before the loose rock is swept. Phase three will be the microsurfacing and final surface layer. This material takes approximately 3 hours to cure before it can be opened to traffic. The contractor is responsible for notifying the residents affected each day, and we're grateful for your cooperation in completing this road improvement. If you have any questions, contact Sutton at 217-431-2381. Firefighters respond to a fully involved structure fire. The Danville Fire Department responded to a reported residential structure fire at approximately 11:29 p.m. on Thursday, May 14th in the unit block of Tillman Avenue. According to a news release from Fire Chief Aaron Marcotte, upon arrival, crews encountered a single-family residence with heavy fire involvement extending through the roof. Due to the extent of fire conditions and structural instability, command made the decision to operate in a defensive strategy utilizing exterior fire attack operations only. Firefighters deployed multiple hand lines and aerial master streams to contain the fire and protect nearby structures from extension. A nearby residence did sustain some damage. An evacuator was later requested to assist with demolition operations due to the unsafe condition of the structure. Ameren personnel responded to secure utilities prior to demolition activities. The fire was brought under control without injury to firefighters or civilians. The structure sustained major fire damage, resulting in total property loss. Anyone with information about this fire is encouraged to contact Captain Ryan Allison at 217-431-2350. County Board approves salary increases. The Vermilion County Board approves a salary increase for County Board members in multiple collective bargaining agreements. On Tuesday, the Vermilion County Board met and approved the new salary schedules, a 3% increase for 3 years, beginning this fall after the November 3rd election. Vermilion County Board Chair Steve Miller praised the county's negotiating team and said the board tried to balance employee needs with taxpayers' concerns. Miller said the county attorney worked very hard in representing the county and added, "We want to be fair with our employees," as the board weighed the new contracts. County Board Member Jerry Hawker said the county was able to complete 5 of the 7 collective bargaining agreements. "I think the overall, just the agreements that you see on the sheet, they're 5 of the 7 units overall, 3% every year for 3 years," he said. "There were some enhancements to some longevity, as you can see, and some floating. We did go through the different contracts. We made some of the language the same. We felt like updates and enhancements, and both sides agree. The board approved collective bargaining agreements for the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police and Labor Council, the County of Vermilion County Sheriff, and co-employers, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW, non-judicial unit, and the County of Vermilion Laborers International Union of North America 703, the Downstate Illinois Labor Districts Council, the Chief Judge of the 5th Judicial Circuit, and the Juvenile Detention Center. All of their contracts expired in November of 2025. The 3% raises, which go into effect in 2029, apply to the following positions: County Treasurer, County Clerk, Supervisor of Assessments, County Board Chairman, Board of Review Chairman Salary, and Board of Review Commissioner Salary. The board also debated adding changes to the attendance requirements. And in police news, missing man's death investigated as homicide. Tim Strader's death is now being investigated as a homicide, according to the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department. Strader, who was reported missing on April 4th after not being seen for several days, was found April 6th by investigators in the sheriff's office in the 1700 block of West Williams Street. Chief Investigator Captain Michael Hartshorn said on Friday, "Yes, it is a homicide investigation. Nothing further to release at this time." The sheriff's office recommends that anyone who has any information contact them at 217-442-4080, or they can submit an anonymous tip through Vermilion County Crime Stoppers online at vccrimestoppers.org using the mobile app P3 Tips or by calling 217-446-TIPS. Amanda Bowe, the sister of Strader, put up a GoFundMe titled "Funeral for Murder Victim Timothy Strader" shortly after investigators discovered her brother's remains. At this time, they've raised $6,020 or $620 for funeral expenses. "Our family is heartbroken and struggling to come to terms with this sudden and tragic loss," Bowe said. "Timothy was a loving son, brother, and friend who touched the lives of everyone he met. His passing has left a void in our hearts that can never be filled." Our condolences go to Mr. Strader's family. Well, we do have one, a little bit of time to squeeze in one article from the features area. And this is one that I think you all will find interesting. It comes to us from OSF Healthcare. And here's the headline: AI will transform disease detection in patient care. A physician and artificial intelligence expert is telling healthcare leaders at Peoria-based OSF Healthcare that AI is rapidly reshaping medicine and could dramatically improve early disease detection, patient care, and diagnostic speed in the coming years. Harvey Castro, MD, known professionally as Dr. GPT, highlighted the growing role of artificial intelligence in healthcare during an OSF Innovation Showcase at Jump Training Simulation and Education Center, emphasizing its potential to shift medicine from a reactive system to one focused on prevention and predictive care. During an interview ahead of his presentation, Castro said people don't come to the emergency department until something's wrong, but he thinks advances in AI-powered predictive analytics could give healthcare providers opportunities to intervene before diseases progress. "Now we're going to be able to do predictive analytics and know that you're going to have a heart attack in 5 years, 10 years from now. Or like I was saying, this conversation, you could say, you know what? The AI is detecting that Dr. Castro has prediabetes and I didn't know that. And so now the AI is telling me. Now I'm like, wait to see if I lose weight. I need to take care of myself. And now I don't even get diabetes because I'm jumping on it years before the actual condition. AI will speed diagnosis time." Dr. Castro suggests that today's five-year-old could live to 150 because of the advancements in longevity that artificial intelligence will bring. He also highlighted the technology's potential in pediatric medicine and rare disease diagnosis, where families and patients often wait months or years for answers. AI systems trained to recognize patterns in symptoms and medical histories could help physicians identify rare conditions faster and begin treatment sooner. But what if we could take that year and a half and crunch it down to a day or two, and now we have a diagnosis, Castro said. Now as a parent, you know what's wrong. It's got to be so frustrating not to know, especially when it comes to your children. Among those at the OSF Innovation Showcase were physicians who were treating kids at OSF Healthcare Children's Hospital of Illinois. His message hit home as Dr. Castro reminded the audience that 50% of rare diseases impact children. There is a lot more to go in this article, but sadly I am out of time. We'll take a look real quickly here at our weather, and we'll talk again soon. Hang tight. Well, weather this week looks like early summer indeed. On Monday, we've got a high of 82 with clouds and sun, low of 70. Tuesday's going to be a shower and thunderstormy day with a 78 degree high. The highs for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are 69, 70, 73. We'll go from a little bit cloudy to beautiful sun as the week goes along. Enjoy this. It's our pre-Memorial Day weekend and week. Have a great one, and I look forward to reading with you all again soon. My name's been Terry Burdick, or is Terry Burdick, and I'll see you next week.